Hare Hare Om Sahana Bhavatu Sahana Bhunaktu Saha Viryam Karavavahai Tejasvi Navadhitamastu
Bible study was compulsory. The Bible Society had issued each student a beautiful bound Bible, and each morning everyone gathered for scripture reading, prayers, and hymns. One of the professors criticized the Vedic teachings of karma and transmigration of the soul. In a court of law, one cannot be prosecuted for a crime unless there is a witness. Similarly, he argued, although according to Hindus, the soul suffers in this present life for the misdeeds of his past life, where is the witness to these misdeeds? Abai was displeased to hear this criticism, and he knew how to refute it. But being only a student, he had remained silent. Socially, he was inferior, and a student had little scope to challenge a professor. But he knew that the professor's argument against karma was insubstantial. He knew there was a witness. Right? I mean, here you have these Christians, and they're saying that, God is all-pervading, all-knowledge, knows everything. And then they criticize karma, saying, who's there to witness what you've done? Therefore, how can you be punished for it? Right. They're saying God sees everything, and then they're saying, how can, you know, in a sense. So this is the difficulty, is that, and then they can't explain why someone's born in a poor family, someone a rich family, someone looks nice, someone doesn't, someone has good health, someone has bad health, and they're born that way. It's not that everybody's born exactly the same, and then after a few years, according to how they behave, then they start to change and everything. No, they're born completely different. They can't explain these things. They have absolutely no explanation. And then they claim God is all-pervading and everything, and then they don't believe it, because if they believed it, then why isn't, you know, how you say, God able to understand these things and give punishment? Does that make sense? And if they say God's eternal, the soul's eternal, then why you weren't there yesterday? Then where did it come from? You know what I'm saying? If you're going to be there forever, then why is it we weren't there before? You know, eternal means eternal. You know, so all these different kinds of difficulties. But we see here is because of their pride. Absolute, pure, unadulterated pride. Then, one, they're considering themselves superior on the material platform. No, they're preaching so-called spirituality. And therefore, there's no scope for discussion. Right? That it's not that you could ask a question, not you could point something out, but it's just not to be discussed. Right? Why? Because they have no philosophy. Right? All they can say is, my faith is good, everybody else is bad. Why? They have no reasons. Right? They can just say everybody else is bad. They can't actually say why theirs is good. Does that make sense? So one should always try to establish your whatever it is you're trying to establish, on its good merits, right? Having done that, then you can always, if need be, point out weaknesses and other aspects that people have doubts, right? But the first thing to establish is, what are the good merits of what you have? Otherwise, why should someone just do what you're doing because everything else is bad? Does that make sense? Right. Okay. Some of the students, having come to Calcutta from small villages, viewed the big city and the presence of so many Europeans with bewilderment and timidity. But to Abhay, Calcutta and the British were not alarming, and he even held a certain fondness for his Scottish teachers, although he looked up to them with a mixture of awe, distance, and some tension. He admired their moral uprightness and their gentlemanly, courteous behavior with the boys. They seemed to him kind-hearted. In other words, you, since qualities are coming from Krishna, therefore, even though someone may have bad qualities, there's always something to appreciate. Does that make sense? Something that you can appreciate. So, in that way, then you look for that element that's good. Because then, from there, you can make it expand. No? Like you want to start a fire. Then, what is it? You can only start a fire if you have another full fire. Right? And then you just take that fire and put it in here, and then you have fire, right? Is that how we make the fires? Yes? Everybody agree with that? No? What don't you agree with?
That you transfer some part of the fire.
Some part of the fire, not the whole fire. Otherwise, we take the fire from this stove, pick the whole thing up, put it in the next stove, then we say, yes, here is the fire. You understand? You're starting from what? How small can you start from? A spark, right? That's the smallest amount of fire you can start with. Right? So that spark, then if you take care of it nicely, right, then it will grow into something big. So in other words, considering what is good, you take that, cultivate that, and then you have a big fire. Does that make sense? The other aspect, the negative, is only important to deal with if the person is very attached to them. Right? That's getting in the way of their development. But if it's not getting in the way of the development, can that girl not lean on the post there unless she's sick? That one back there. No, not. Don't turn around. I said, the girl leaning against the post. You're leaning against the post? Yes. So then you're leaning against the post, then you're turning around and looking at who's behind leaning on the post. Right? You have to understand is that there's etiquette, there's culture, and it's not all about yourself. If it's all about yourself, that's great, as long as your complete goal in life is all your companions, all your friends, and everybody important to you is actually made out of dead matter like this. You know what I'm saying? So if your only goal in life is that your best friends are going to be your clothes, and your bags, and your shoes, and your phones, and your watches, and your little computers, and your pots and pans, and that's it, then you do whatever you like. But if there's any consideration that maybe people are important, right? If maybe people are important, then the same thing. You're sitting in the back also. You're a little kid. You're sitting in the back behind the other kid. Why don't you try to move yourself up here? You know? You two wouldn't happen to be related, would you? Same mentality. It's all about you. Nothing else. You understand? Otherwise, that's all you're going to have. That's all you're going to have. you're not going to have anything else other than things. Why? Because things don't care if you're self-centered. Oh, they break, they fall apart, they rip. But they don't make any noise. Problem is people make noise. People complain about your bad behavior. Why? Because it's not a relationship. If it's all about you, it's not a relationship. Relationship means that you voluntarily agree to, you know, cooperate with somebody else. Which doesn't seem to be, you know, many of your idea of, you know, human life. Your idea is, it's all about you, and that's all that matters. You know, and so therefore you can do anything, say anything, you know, whatever you like is what is important. Does this make sense? Yes, does this make sense or not? Right? So we have to see that you understand this, right? Okay. It may be a bad habit. You've been self-centered for years or your whole life. Okay, that happens. But now is the time when you learn to change that. Right? Otherwise, when you get big, then you're not going to find anybody serious to be friends with. You might find some friends, other people like that, who then you get together and your only basis of relationship is criticizing others or harassing others. That's it. It won't be actually that they care for you. Not at all. In fact, if you're not in the room, they'll goof about you. And then when you walk back in, then they won't stop goofing about you. But otherwise, they don't care. We understand? So you have to be very, very careful on these things, that we see that if we're actually going to progress, we have to be able, hey, how are you going? We're talking to you, right? Like that. So you don't need to check out his elbow or something, whatever's important. So these kind of elements, then, you have to consider. You know what I'm saying? And you have to learn that you consider these things by someone telling you, right? Not that you have to get in trouble or, you know, some kind of serious punishment, then only you'll, you know, not do the nonsense. No, but we're talking about on your own you don't do nonsense and you understand what actually should be done. And so you do that, right? This makes for a nice person, a nice human being. People like to be around other people who are nice. No one likes to be around somebody who is not nice. No one. You may think everybody likes you, but actually if you check, nobody likes you. Why? Why don't they like you? Because you only care for yourself and your only happiness is seeing other people suffer. That's it. Your only happiness is when other people are suffering. Or when you're doing something completely crazy that's actually dangerous and you don't kill yourself. Right? So that doesn't make for a very stable lifestyle, you know? And because you are self-centered means you have no control over your senses. Because you have no control over your senses, that means the boys when they grow up will have to get, you know, be around girls, and the girls when they grow up will have to be around boys. But since you can't control your senses, you have to be with them. And because you don't care for anybody else, then they're going to be upset with you. And so you're going to be miserable your whole life because no one will like you. You have to be around them because, you know, but no one wants you to be around them. Right? And so you go your whole life just thinking that you're fine when everybody hates you. So is that what you want? No? Is that what you want? Right? Is that what you want? Okay, so these kind of things you have to be very, very conscious of. God consciousness means you're becoming conscious of God. You're becoming conscious of yourself. You're becoming conscious of the surroundings that you're in, so that in those surroundings you can work with others and serve God. Right? Does that make sense? So if one's not conscious, one cannot be a nice person. Only conscious people are nice. Unconscious people are not nice. They can't be nice. Because you can only be nice to somebody if you know they're there. But if you don't recognize that they're there, how are you going to be nice to them? And if all the more you recognize that they're there is so you can harass them, then that's even worse. Right? So it's even negative. So one thing is that you're self-satisfied, you don't need anything from anybody, and therefore you don't notice anybody and don't interact with anybody. And can you stay awake? You understand? So the point is like this. We can be nice, we can be pleasant. But, you know, if you insist on, you know, doing all kinds of funny things, then we can talk strongly. You know what I'm saying? And right now, we're trying to be nice. Otherwise, on these subjects, you know, we can yell and scream. You know what I'm saying? Okay? We understand these things? We have to make the endeavor to try to be enough conscious that we behave properly. We notice other people and know how to interact. They're senior to us, we're respectful. They're equal to us, we're friends. They're junior to us, we're kind to them. Right? That's what we have to learn. Then you'll be a nice person that everybody likes. And now you take it for granted that everybody likes you because you live at home and your mommy likes you. Right? But you have to remember, is when you are not in your home, there's nobody else has to like you. There's no reason that they have to like, there's no law. Right? There's no law that they have to like you. It's a no rule anywhere in any book. In any law book, in any land, no government says you have to like everybody else. You know what I'm saying? So therefore, if that's all you want, then that's great. But if you want something beyond that, you want to be able to interact with other people and have them be comfortable with you, other than your mother. Right? Right? So your mother is putting, when you yell and scream every 5 minutes, you know, you can't go to the toilet, you have to eat every 5 minutes. You know, you can't talk, so no one can even tell what's wrong with you. Like, so now, this is an improvement. Right? At least you're not need full attention every moment. Now there's a little bit more space, so of course it's more comfortable. Right? So if your mom will like you like that, she'll like you like this. Right? Your mom's always going to like you. Right? But you can't guarantee everyone else is going to automatically like you. So that you have to work for. That you have to develop qualities. And if you have those nice qualities, your mom will like you even more. You know what I'm saying? She'll like you if you're not a nice person. But if you're a nice person, that'll make her even more happy. Does this make sense? Right? So all of you are here because you have a brain. Right? Some of you, of course, have a bidane. But in any case, whether you have bidane, brain, whatever it is that's in there, you know, how you say, well-dried piece of cow dung or fresh cow dung or a very nice green pea, you know, floating around. Like that, or if you only have even half a brain, like that, I've heard many moms comment on, if you had half a brain, you'd be dangerous, like that. So, you understand? So, you're here, school means it's education, education means intelligence, that means you're here because you're intelligent, right? Does that make sense? Right? Can you tell the difference between your head and your elbow? Yes or no?
No.
Okay. What about you? Can you repeat the question? Okay. So you understand? You're here because you have brains. So the point is use them. You got brains, use them. Right? If you don't have brains, okay, then you can't use them. But then at least admit you have no brains. You know what I'm saying? So if you have brains, right? Bidane has. Yes? Okay. That means there's potential to tell the difference between his head and his elbow. Okay? You understand? Right? Do we all get this? The point is all of you can do this. That's why you're here. The Vedic culture, this is what's taught in the schools because everybody can do this. Right? No one's asking you to do something you can't do. Right? So that's all it is develop the nice qualities that you're considerate enough of others that actually others like to be around you. Right? Then, you know, you have so many aspects of a relationship, then you always have somebody you can work with, someone you can do service with. Right? Otherwise, you're alone. Because you have to remember, if no one else likes you, don't expect God's going to like you either. You know what I'm saying? God's surrounded by so many devotees, and they can all work together. So if you can't work with others, you're not going to impress Krishna either. Right? Yes? Okay. So, we see here, Srila Prabhupada is so nice. He's with these people that even don't have a good understanding of the religion, but he respects them and he deals with them properly. Right? Does that make sense? Yes.
Krishna is all good.
Yes, he's all good. So you want to know how come these guys are all bad. If they're coming, parts and parcels of Krishna coming from Krishna, where did the bad come from?
Something like that.
Because the front side of Krishna means is where, you know, everything auspicious, but anything inauspicious comes from the back side of Krishna. Right? Not that Krishna's back is inauspicious, but things that are inauspicious come from there. Because if there's going to be auspicious, there has to be inauspicious. If there's going to be light, there has to be darkness. Right? It means they go together. There's a balance. Because we're dealing with two. If we're not dealing with that, if we're not dealing with any good or any bad, then you're dealing with God as Atmarama. So he doesn't expand his creation. So everything is there in perfect balance and harmony. But there's no rasa, no relationship is going on. But as soon as he expands, then that means automatically there's two. Right? So therefore you have to be able to reconcile the difference between the two and make it work. Does that make sense? So, the problem is what happens is someone who's facing Krishna, then they have all good qualities because they're seeing Krishna's face. Someone who's not seeing Krishna's, who's not facing Krishna is actually seeing his back. You understand? Like that. Is seeing his back. So Bahir Mukh means you're not looking at Krishna's face, you're looking at his back. And so that back, that's where Maya is. You understand? So because of that, then all these so-called bad qualities come up. Means they're only there because the soul's conditioned. They're not the qualities of the soul. You know what I'm saying? They're the conditioned nature of the living entity. So the living entity is pure, but the living entity identifies with these impure elements. Right? And because of that, then we suffer. Does that make sense? So that's why one looks for the spark, because the bad qualities actually aren't the souls. They're just the conditioned nature. So any aspect of the conditioned nature that's good, then one tries to cultivate that and bring that out. Right? Because then, as the soul starts to re-identify, then they get established in their proper constitutional position as servant of Krishna, and they start to identify with the proper behavior, Vaishnava etiquette, all those things. Yeah? Yes? Does that make sense? But there's so much brain, the head's so heavy you have to hold it up. No? Anything else? So you have to understand is that where Gurukul means that it's a combination between a formal and informal situation. Right? Formal is very obvious. Everything is very regimented. Everything is there. And there's no question of any being relaxed. Right? But in that, one learns some nice etiquette, one's learns to organize one's thoughts and all that, but to be able to interact with others, that relaxed, that natural mood, that's not necessarily there. So the subtleties you may not pick up. Right? In an inf- yes.
What do you mean by
organize your thoughts? Because everything is very, very regimented, right? Very, very lined up, then you'll start to think like that also. Everything has to be placed, like here, you're all sitting anywhere. But if it's a formal situation, we make everybody sit in exact lines, right? Both ways, you know, front to back and left to right, and go from small up to the big, you know, or from, you know, junior to senior. There'd be some way it's exactly, you know, formalized. Does that make sense? So in the same way you'd start to think like that, you make things, you compartmentalize everything very nicely. And so then that works. So it's nice for logic and all that, but it's not necessarily very good for subtlety. Like that. So then the informal environment's where you pick up the subtleties. You know, because by association, then you pick things up. You know, just like one madman likes to go to the pump, and after enough soaps on the pumps, then slide around till he bounces off the pumps enough times and rolls into the drain. Then others who would never do that or never think of doing that, not that they couldn't do it, but they never would have thought of doing that because they don't tend to be that crazy, though they may have a few crazy attributes, right? But by such association, then the next thing, they're over there sliding around, bouncing off the pumps. Maybe that's it. It's like, you know, like a pinball machine. You know, you shoot the ball and it goes and it boinks off all the different things like that. You get points. So, you know, they get more points for the number of pumps they bounce off of and different things like that. And is that how it is? You know, 2 points for a pump, 3 points for a drain. No? Oh, I thought you were going to say like that. How many points do you get for bumping into a boy, or even more if you can knock over a full bucket of clothes with soap in it that's not yours, right? Right, isn't it? Does that make sense? So then others will start doing this. So that's the thing of the informal. So that's why you're trying to cultivate the good qualities, because then you'll see those and others try to develop those, and others will develop from seeing you. Right? Otherwise, if you're not, then these other qualities will come up. Right? So, therefore, even though the environment is informal, one has to be able to maintain the etiquette. If one can't maintain the etiquette, then things won't work so well. You won't learn much. Because neither you'll get the benefit of the formal environment, so that there's structure and you'll learn in that way, and neither you get any benefit from the informal, that you learn the subtleties. Right? So therefore, it's a balance between these two. Does that make sense? So it's relaxed in one way, but very strict in another. Right? So that's what's unique. Because in generally non-Vedic scenarios, it's either very strict or very liberal. It never has the combination of both. Right? Or if it does have a combination, it's always the worst combination. You're very liberal with yourself and very strict with others. Right? high standards and strictness you expect from others and from yourself. Very broad-minded, very liberal, very lenient. Does that make sense?
Yes.
Yeah. No? Don't, doesn't make sense? Makes sense. Yeah? Okay. The governor of Bengal, who was Scottish, once came to Scottish Church's College, visiting all the classrooms. The rooms were large, holding 150 students. Wow, 150 students in one classroom. That's packing them in, right? But Abhay had a front row seat and got a close look at the famous governor, the Marquis of Zetland. Or I think it's Marquis, right? You say the S? You say the S.
Probably not.
Marquis of Zetland. No? Because Marquis is French, no? I don't think it's English. Yeah. The school operated on the principle of strict social distance between Europeans and Indians. Even the Bengali faculty members, being of a supposedly inferior race, had to use a faculty lounge separate from that of the European professors, right? You know, it's like Sanskrit is so much more developed than English. Yeah, but and it's the source and everything, but somehow... But it works with the same thing, is that the same persons will consider Africans to be, you know, lesser. But they'll say that, you know, by Darwin's theory, they're coming from Africa. You know, so that, in other words, they're taking it that they as Europeans and specifically as English, you know, or let's say British in this case, are, you know, the superior development of human, you know, how you say, evolution, like that. Somehow it never gets these guys very far, right? You know, they go along for a while and then lose everything. Part of the college syllabus was England's Work in India by M. Ghosh, an Indian. The book elaborately explained how India had been primitive before the British rule. Abhay's economic professor would sometimes shout at his class when he became frustrated with their slowness. Addressing them as representatives of the whole Indian nation, he would say, "You should never expect independence. You cannot rule. You can only work like asses. That's all." Right? Notice he's saying this here when he's young. This is before the independence movement even started. Because actually the independence movement, you know, as we heard about it, didn't start with Gandhi. It actually started in the 1850s. Right? Means the British were feeling that the Indians were inferior. And they needed to control them. But they felt that they couldn't get, you know, complete control of them because of their culture. Their culture was so strong and their community was so strong. So they felt that if they made them think like them, you know, and have the same values, then they could control them even more. Right? That would be one thing. The other thing is that they felt that their Christian culture was so much superior. Right? It's amazing that it was so superior. Why did all the Europeans have to go everywhere else in the world to get wealth? Everybody else had the wealth. All these savages had the wealth. How did the savages have the wealth? You know what I'm saying? So, and they didn't, right? So, what was I saying? Oh, yeah. So then they devised, well, we have to educate them in our education. Otherwise, the Indians had their educational system, the British had theirs. Then they understood, well, we can't educate everybody, well, we can educate the leaders of the society, the Brahmins, the Kshatriyas, the Vaishyas, you know, all these top class, the best amongst, you know, the Indian culture. So then doing that, then they... invited them all, set up schools and invited them so that they all came to their schools. Then they got educated. Then after doing that for 20 years and the first group that came out, then having the value system now of the British, then they wanted independence. Right? So if they had just left India to itself, they just wanted to manage it and get the benefits from it, taking the tax and all that, and you know, whatever other benefits they wanted. They just had to leave the Indians follow their culture, and they'd still be managing the place. Because otherwise, the Mohammedans ruled for 1,000 years, you know, and they weren't talking about independence. British, you know, 250. But after 150, they made this mistake to try to make them like them. You know? And then, but at the same time making a difference. The Muslims that made the Hindus like them, they became full Hindus, full Muslims. So there was no difference. But the British wanted them to be like them, think like them, but be subservient, that they would be in a lower position. So therefore, it's not going to work. So after 150 years, they actually started to lose control. Even though supposedly they're the best, you know, they prided themselves in being the best administrators in the world, right? But and in their mind, these savages from, you know, the plains of Central Europe, you know, that rode around on horses and plundered villages and that, the Mughals, they came in and managed for 1,000 years. And they set up an empire and wealth in that that the British never could copy. Right? Does that make sense? So one has to, you know, if one looks at the reality of things, then it doesn't necessarily turn out as well. Right? College life was demanding. No longer was Abhay free to spend hours before the deities of Radha and Govinda early in the morning. That had been a boyhood luxury. When he would daily pass hours in the Mullah's temple before the golden forms of Radha Govinda, watching the pujaris as they worshipped the deities with incense, flowers, lamps, musical kirtan, and opulent prasadam. As a child, he had played within the grassy compound of the temple or watched the men cooking kachoris on the roadside, or bicycled or flown his kite with Baba Tarini. His life had always centered on his home at Harrison Road. His mother's talks, his father's worshipping Krishna, these scenes were now past. Now he spent his days within the compound of Scottish Church College. Here there was also a lawn and a garden with birds and even a small banyan tree. But instead of worship, there was study. The atmosphere at Scottish churches was academic, and even the casual conversation amongst the students as they gathered before the notice boards at the main entrance or passed in groups in and out of the main gates was usually about class assignments or collegiate activities. Right? So Prabhupada went through all this. So now we notice that here is that he felt it wasn't so ideal, right? Therefore, that's why Prabhupada, in his movement, established Gurukula, right? Not modern education. Even though he went through modern education, right? He could understand the superiority of the Vedic, because in there you do your academic studies, at the same time you cultivate the devotional side. So there's a proper balance. While in these modern educational system, there's no question of balance because you're only dealing basically with one side. That's the consideration. The school is there because of the material knowledge. Then, because we're devotees, you add some spiritual knowledge to it. You understand? But the whole reason the school exists is not for the spiritual knowledge. It's for the material knowledge. You understand? That's the difference. While the Vedic system is, it's there for the spiritual knowledge, and since you have to work in the material world, therefore some material knowledge that's useful is important. Does that make sense? Right? Yes? When Abhay was not actually sitting side by side with his fellow students, sharing a classroom bench before one of the long desks that stood row after row in the lecture hall, when he was not looking attentively forward during the lecture of one of his professors, usually a reverend dressed in European suit, speaking a Scottish brogue and pronouncing words like duty as duty, right? Like, yeah, brogue is, I think, a very thick kind of accent, like that. When he was not actually in the classroom hearing their lectures on Western logic or chemistry or psychology, then he was at his homework assignments, sitting at a table amidst the bookshelves in the college library, reading from an open book or writing notes while the electric fans overhead rippled the pages. Or he was at home with his father, sisters, and brothers, but reading his lessons or writing a paper for the reverend in the lecture hall. He had to abandon worshiping the Krishna deity he had demanded his father give him years before. He had retired his deities to a closed box. Right? Someone has to see if that's worth it. Right? That one has to be seen. So Krishna Prabhupada was very careful to see that no one else had to go through that. The other thing that is interesting, having, you know, said that, is that what Prabhupada was learning, you know, chemistry, psychology, right? Very few people learn psychology when they go to college. You have to actually specialize in it, generally. Unless it's something to do with business, like marketing or something, where you have to know some psychology. But otherwise, they don't. So Prabhupada learned so many things, a very strict education. And so then to say that Prabhupada, you know, was just from the spiritual world, didn't know anything about the material world, so actually couldn't actually understand how to apply Krishna consciousness in a Western environment. And he grew up with Westerners. He learned from them. Right? And he was in New York watching the place, seeing the people before he started the movement. Why was the movement successful? Because what he did was matched for the people. And while Prabhupada did what he did, the movement expanded and flourished, and thousands of devotees and hundreds of temples are opened. Right? And if you don't follow what Prabhupada does, then everything stagnates. Does that make sense? So we should understand that Prabhupada knew what he was doing, both materially and spiritually. Gaur Mohan was undisturbed that his pet son could no longer attend all the devotional activities of his childhood. He saw that Abhai was remaining pure in all his habits, that he was not adopting Western ideas or challenging his own culture, and that as a student at Scottish Church College, he would not likely be exposed to immoral behavior. Gaur Mohan was satisfied to see Abhai getting a good education to prepare for a career after graduation. He would be a responsible Vaishnava. He would soon marry and get a job. So here he's saying this, he's seeing is that he was remaining pure, he was not adopting Western ideas or challenging his own culture. Right? So therefore, if we challenge the Vedic culture, right, take up the Western lifestyle, then that is not, you know, that would not be education. Does that make sense? Education means culture. Like that. One of Abhai's classmates and close companions was Rupendranath Mitra. Abhai and Rupen would study together and sit side by side in the assembly hall during Bible class, uttering the compulsory prayers. Rupen noticed that although Abhai was a serious student, he was never enamored of Western education or ambitious of scholastic achievements. Abhai would confide to Rupen, "I don't like all these things," right? But it was his, you know, what he was supposed to be doing. He did it well, like that. But it didn't mean he thought it was anything special. And sometimes he spoke of moving away. "What are you thinking?" Rupen would ask, and Abhai would reveal his mind. Rupen found that Abhai was always thinking about something religious, something philosophical or devotional about God. Abhai studied the Western philosophers and scientists, yet they held no fascination for him. After all, they were only speculating, and their conclusions were not in the devotional mood and spirit of the Vaishnava training he had received from his father and the Vedic scriptures. The sudden access to the wealth of Western knowledge, which created in some an appetite to study deeply and in others a desire to get ahead in the world through good grades and career, left Abhay untouched. Certainly, within his heart, he was always thinking of something religious, something philosophical or devotional about God. And yet, as a Scottish Church's college man, he gave his time and attention to academic life. One night after his first year of college, Abhay had an unusual dream. The deity of Krishna his father had given him appeared to Abhay, complaining, quote, "Why have you put me away in this box? You should take me out and worship me again." Abhay felt sorry that he had neglected his deity, and he resumed his worship of Radha and Krishna at home, despite his assignments. That's fine. Why have you put me in this box? Okay. So he sees that he's doing these things. In other words, if it's your duty to deal with the material energy, then you deal with it well. Right? But it never doesn't mean one becomes enamored by it, one doesn't change one's attitude, change one's values, change one's view. Does that make some sense? Yes? No? Maybe? Kind of? Something, something? Okay. Some other question? Okay, so then we'll end here.
Om Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare.
Jai Srila Prabhupada ki,
Jai
Samaveta Bhakta Vrinda ki,
Jai
Nitai Gaur Premanandi. Supas Chandra Bosch.
As you're mentioning about the Nadi with the daughter of Krishna, she stays there.
Mm-hmm.
Actually, there is one temple in Maharashtra near Nasik. It's actually used to be the capital of Maharaj Ambarish. And the Sudarshan Chakra which came to protect Maharaj Ambarish just sank down in the ground and made a veil there.
Wow.
And there is a stone with writings of Ambarish Maharaj. Whoever tries to remove the water and see the golden Sudarshan lying in here, his whole dynasty will die. So next to that place, there is this temple of Mahavishnu with his Shankar Chakra and Gada.
Mm-hmm.
And underneath one hand is the deity of Maharaj Ambarish. And right behind, there is the deity of Lakshmi Devi. So you have to see it through a glass to take darshan of Lakshmi Devi. And on top of his head, instead of a crown, there is a Shivalinga. So does that has any connection with that?
Not sure. Depends upon, you'd have to ask them, what is this form of Lakshmi?
They don't know.
Oh, okay. But she's on his back facing the other way. Might. Because otherwise, if Shiva's there, then that also might be, you know, Lakshmi as she is a form of Parvati. You know, as Krishna transforms as Shiva, she transforms as Parvati.
Beautiful.